He's still there. He knows you're coming. Arnie Johnson was standing in the kitchen listening. Debbie turned to him and said, I don't think we ought to move in there. These kind of things really do happen sometimes, and David's not lying. He doesn't know the first thing about this stuff. He won't even watch horror movies. Debbie, I don't think he's lying either. And I'm not ready to throw the cards in yet. There's too much at stake. There's got to be some kind of rational explanation. Well, then name one, Debbie said. All right, said Arnie. David, I want to ask you a question. I want you to be totally honest with me. I will, Arnie, David said, but I have been honest. Granted, but still answer my question truthfully. Whatever you say, I won't tell on you. Now, there are drugs and pills that can make you say or even see the kind of things you've been talking about, so give it to me straight. Did you find some pill in the house yesterday and take it by accident? No, Arnie, I wouldn't take nothing. Really, I told you what I did because it wouldn't have been fair not to. The ghost man even said if I did tell you, he'd punish me. It was a favor. They argue around a while and finally decide they're going to go to the house. When they arrived, though, Mrs. Johnson, that they thought would be there by appointment, was not there yet, Arnie's mother. They walked up to the front door expecting the sheepdog to start barking loudly, but there was no barking. They found the dog lying docilely on the living room floor. His fluffy coat was matted and dirty. Saliva had caked around his mouth. He had wet himself, and there was blood on his paw. The poor animal obviously had a traumatic night. Ann approached the dog carefully, not sure how he might react. Arnie did, but George only licked Arnie's hand. The right paw showed bleeding around the claws. Arnie, feeling terrible, led George outside into the fresh air. They checked the cellar and found scratch marks on the door of the so-called storage room, just as David had predicted. The dog had apparently tried to get into the room by pulling at the lower corner of the door. Well, let's skip on. Mrs. Johnson pulled up. Her three young girls sat in the front with her. Back seat and trunk full of boxes and suitcases. The girls were cheery, so was Mary. Everybody's happy. Move in a new house. They told Mary about David's experience. Mary said, I just can't believe the two of you are doing this to me. I don't swallow that story about David. I think it's a lie. They tried to ask her whether they should move in or not. I sure am, Mary said. If you don't, I want the keys to the house. You two are going to walk out on me, go ahead. So they have a little family fight. They went back to the Glatzel house about noon. David came in for lunch. Arnie asked him casually, how's it going? I'm doing okay, the child replied, but you're not. The ghost man's really mad at you. He says, you're going to get it because you told Mary Johnson about him. I don't want to hear it, said Debbie. Tell the ghost man to go to hell. This thing, the beast, as you call it, is very real to him, Judy said. What do you think we ought to do? Humor him, ignore him, who cares, Debbie said in frustration. We just went through a lot of grief to end the problem. He had fought all day. After lunch, Debbie called Pat Giddings, her best friend, next-door neighbor. They'd had such a fight that Debbie and Arnie were going to move out and Mary was staying in. That's why Debbie's so mad. So they asked Pat if they can borrow her truck to go and move their things out. They'd moved in, now they were moving out, and had a fight with Arnie's mother and Mary staying with her kids, and they're at each other's throat because Mary doesn't believe the lies of Debbie's brother, as she says. And Debbie and Arnie are just convinced enough they don't want to move in. They've had the big fight, and that's why she's mad. Don't want to hear about the ghost man anymore. But they got to go back and get their stuff, so they borrow the pickup. And then they tell the history of Mary. Bring it up to date. Keep going. Arnie and Debbie felt a combination of guilt and relief about deciding not to stay in the rental house in Newton. And when Arnie, they'd moved now, packed up, friends pick up back, had a fight, but, you know, cut the cords. Arnie and Debbie arrived back at the Glatzel house. They found Judy sitting alone at the kitchen table. Debbie immediately knew something was wrong. Young Carl had been picking on everyone today, Judy told her. All afternoon he's been yelling and arguing, not just at me, but at Alan and Jason, especially David. He's really been giving it to poor David, his younger brother, telling him he's crazy, calling him names like Dracula and Fairy Brain, and jumping out yelling boo to scare him. Carl's doing that? Debbie asked amazed. Judy nodded. I don't know what's come over him. Well, they talk about that, and then Debbie says amazed, what else has David said? Suddenly David cracked the bedroom door and walked into the kitchen. His face was drawn and pale, and his eyes were wide with terror. He's coming, Mommy. He just left. He's coming to get me. Who's coming, David? Judy asked. He's coming to take me, David cried. You've got to stop him. Who, David? Who? Him. That thing, that figure from Mary's house. It's coming now, he cried frantically. He's coming down Route 25. It's floating fast above the treetops. David began trembling as Judy rose to her feet beside him. It just went past Brookfield Center Post Office. It's getting closer. Terror had overtaken the boy. Tears welled up in David's eyes while his voice rose until he was screaming. He's by the church. Oh, no, he's above Silvermine Road. He's coming fast. Stop him, Mommy. He's coming for me. He's almost here. Help me, Mommy, David pleaded wildly. My God, what'll I do? Judy cried, holy water. I got holy water. I'll get the holy water against it. She ran into the bedroom, grabbed a small bottle of holy water from atop her dresser. He's coming. He's crossing the Giddings yard, David reported hysterically. Then, this is just too lengthy and boring, isn't it? Then, his eyes wide open, his mouth agape, David backed away from the door as far as he could get. It's here. It's on the back porch. It's at the back door. Three ominous knocks suddenly sounded. Arnie and Debbie blanched while Judy threw a spray of holy water on the back door, declaring in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, leave us in peace. Staring at the kitchen door, David reported with a momentary relief, it worked. He hates it. He's moved into the backyard. All seemed well for a few seconds. Oh, no, David cried. Now he's coming around the front. He's going to try to get in the front door. Then, you don't want me to continue, do you? Yes, you know I'm not raising any money doing this. Just scaring the hell out of you. This is more scary than that wicked lover crept. It's only the beginning. I've read some wild ones. This is the biggest lie I've ever read. But it's true. All right. I'm reading The Devil in Connecticut. Same author as the one who wrote The Demonologist. Gerald Brittle, author of The Demonologist. A Connecticut couple have rented a house. Arnie Cheyenne Johnson, and Debbie. Debbie has three younger brothers. They rented the house, and when they got to the house, some strange things happened, particularly in a room where little David, the younger brother, alone in the room, was shoved by an unseen force that felt like a hand onto a waterbed that was in the house, and an apparition appeared in front of him saying, "Beware." Scared the poor kid half to death. He was scared to tell it for fear he wouldn't be believed. He shared it with his older brother. They went in and shared it with his mother and his sister and her boyfriend, who were moving into the house with her boyfriend's mother. He then indicated an ability to still see this apparition in the house in the other town, even though he was not there. They went back the next day. Some of the things he had seen were verified. They determined they wouldn't move into the house. Had a fight with Arne Johnson's mother, who felt like that the plans they'd laid were being messed up by, as she would term it, the lying imaginations of this younger brother of Debbie, her daughter-in-law-to-be. They have such a fight. They separate. Debbie and Arne move back temporarily to Debbie's parents, the Glatzels, until they can find another place. While they are there, this poor little kid, David, I think he's about 11, chubby boy, always outgoing and gleeful, comes panic-stricken into the room, claims to see this apparition. And that's where we left off. "He's coming, Mommy," he says. "He just left. He's coming to get me." "Who's coming, David?" "He's coming to take me. You got to stop him." "He's coming down Route 25. It's floating fast above the treetops." Now, February 1981, Arne Johnson, the young man, who is in love with David's older sister, Debbie, and is in the house, will be arrested for murder and claim that the killing occurred as he was under the possession of the devil. To make the story short, in one of the most horrible cataloging of infestation, oppression, possession, in one of the most horrifying, I can't find a better word for it, exorcisms, when it seemed that after the boy David is finally possessed and the priest is performing the exorcism on him, that he will die in the struggles as the demonic force is resisting being cast out of the boy. Arne, in a moment of compassion, will throw himself on the boy, crying and screaming, "Take me." In an act of compassion for the boy, he will scream, "Take me. Let him go." Now, there are laws that bind demon forces, to those that understand the laws of God. They'll give you warning. There's a little clue to pick up here. This apparition's first words to David were, "Beware." You either better understand how to exercise at that point or get the living daylights out of there. Just remember this, some of you get too scared. There will be a way to trace the entrance, the reason, the origin, the contact, and they must give warning. There's a point where you can stop during the infestation beginnings. And they can't I don't want to theologize. I want to read the story. But I'll say this. When Arnie invited him in an altruistic moment, he didn't save the boy. He just opened the door for dual possession. And possession came to Arnie. And in a terrible moment, witnessed. By two people. He kills a man and pleads demon possession, and you'll be the judge as the story is read. He was not allowed to carry that plea into the courtroom through a technicality, and he was sentenced to murder. What made this story that wouldn't have come out because the battling of the demons by the priest and the exorcism fell into the category of privileged confession, but the trial brought the story out. Now, if this story is not true, Random House and the authors ought to be sued for peddling such a story as a fraud on the general public. It's the most unbelievable story I've ever read. I again want my Ghostbusters in the area to check it out. It's too unbelievable. But it's believable if you understand demon forces. Now, he's coming. It just went past Brookfield Center Post Office. It's getting closer. Terror had overtaken the boys. Tears welled up in David's eyes while his voice rose until he was screaming. He's by the church. No, he's above the Silver Mine Road. He's coming fast. Stop him, Mommy. He's coming for me. He's almost here. Help me, Mommy. David pleaded wildly. My God, what'll I do? Judy cried. Holy water. I got holy water. I'll get the holy water against it. She ran into her bedroom, grabbed a small bottle of holy water from the top of her dresser. He's coming. He's crossing the getting yard, David reported hysterically. Then his eyes wide open, his mouth agape, David backed away from the door as far as he could get. It's here. It's on the back porch. It's at the back door. Three ominous knocks suddenly sounded. Arnie and Debbie blanched, while Judy threw a spray of holy water on the back door, declaring, "In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, leave us in peace." Staring at the kitchen door, David reported with momentary relief, "It worked. He hates it. He's moving into the backyard." All seemed well for a few seconds. "Oh no," David cried. "Now he's coming around the front. He's going to try and get in the front door." Judy ran to the front door, blessed it with the sign of the cross, and commanded in the name of Jesus Christ, "Go back to where you came from." "That stopped him again," said David, more confident now. "Is it gone?" Judy asked desperately. "No, he's moving around the house, looking for another place to get in," David said. The entity then attempted entry through every door, window, and access point, including the cellar and fireplace. Frantically, Judy threw holy water wherever and whenever David told her to. She felt both silly and scared, casting around holy water and commanding unseen spirits to leave, but she also believed her son. Finally, David reported that the entity had stopped trying to get in and was now sitting on a lawn chair in the backyard. Sure enough, a lawn chair that had been folded up on the porch had mysteriously been set up on the lawn. Soon David told him the spirit was leaving. First it went next door to the Giddings house, where it inspected Arnie and Debbie's belongings in the basement. Then it drifted back above the treetops to the rental house in Newtown. The weird experience left everyone shaken and disturbed. They all wanted to declare the episode ridiculous and forget about it. But their fear was real. Suppose the thing came back. Suppose it got in when someone was home alone. Then Carl, the dad, returned home. No one had yet told him about the spirit or so-called spirit problem. Knowing her father didn't believe in such things, Debbie held nothing back as she described the events that persuaded them not to take the rental house. And I'm here in New England, they're saying this. You let $500 go down the drain because an 11-year-old boy told you there might be a ghost in that house? Carl Glatzel was incredulous. That's right, Debbie said, along with the statements of two other women who lived on the property that I skipped over, didn't tell you about. The dog's unusual behavior and all the craziness that's gone on in this house since the whole thing began. What do you have to say, David? Carl asked. She's telling the truth, the boy replied. David might as well have said nothing. Carl simply looked at him and said, I don't buy it. You're all dreaming. See, even Daddy thinks you're crazy, Carl, the oldest brother, said. Mom, Debbie, Arnie, Alan, Jason, David are all flipping out. They're all nuts. They've gone cuckoo. Discussion soon degenerated into a shouting match. It was bedtime. Arnie and Debbie would spend the next few nights in sleeping bags on the living room floor till they found a place. At 11:15, when the three boys were settled, Debbie went to the bedroom to check on Jason and say goodnight. They went back to the house the next day. I'm trying to hunt and pick because I want to get to the real good part. Debbie's eye was injured. They went to the doctor. I'll skip over that. When they came back, David said, you know how this happened to my eye? David said, truthfully, no, I didn't see it, but the ghost man was laughing real hard when it happened. He said he did it. Ghost man hell, Debbie said disgustedly, this thing isn't a ghost, it's a bleep bleep beast. The beast, it just said to me, the beast, it just said to me, David corrected. Where's the thing now, Judy asked. David turned and pointed. He's standing on the hill over there watching us. He's been watching me all morning. He's trying to find a way to get into this house. This is ridiculous, Judy said. We've got to put a stop to this nonsense. How, Debbie asked. No one had an answer. That afternoon, the family drove to Norwalk for a July 4th picnic with relatives on the shore. Got rained out. Skip along. They pulled into the driveway the night of July 4th. Looked for a minute as though all the lights were on in the house. Yet, as they pulled up to the garage, the house stood dark and foreboding. Carl, the dad, led the way inside. He refused to give credence to the flighty notions that his children and wife had spoken about. His attitude was one of complete and unswerving denial of this foolishness. Young Carl took his cue from his father, promptly followed him into the house. The rest of the family followed. David remained in the car. He knew something the others didn't. About 10 minutes later, Arnie went out and found David sitting in the back seat of the station wagon. What's the matter, Arnie asked. He climbed in and sat beside David. The thing. That beast thing. It's inside the house. It got in through the attic. It's there right now, David said. What's it doing up there? Waiting. No, I mean, why is it there? I told you before it came to get me. Why you? I don't know. It was hard for Arnie to... You want me to continue?
Yes, sir.
It was hard for Arnie to deal with the boy, though David spoke with conviction. He was talking about something invisible, indeed something seemingly impossible. Arnie was simply reduced to speaking on his level. David, even if the beast is up there, we're going to find a way to get rid of it. And with all of us around, he's not going to get to you. He's not going to take you anywhere. He'll have to go through me. He'll have to go through all of us first. Now, come on, let's go inside now. No way, David declared. I'm not going in there. I'll sleep in the car. You don't understand what I'm talking about. None of you do. He wants to kill me. He said so. As Arnie and David sat in the car, Carl Right, so the father came out. He walked over to David's side of the car and opened the door and said, "Let's go, son. I want you in the house." "No," David said, disobeying his father for the first time in his life. "Don't tell me no, David. Get your bleep off that seat and march into the house." He didn't say bleep. "Or I'll pick you up and carry you in." David got out of the car and walked into the house with Arnie and his father. There was nothing perceptibly different inside the house. Jason, young Carl, and Carl Sr. went to sleep early. David, however, refused to go to bed, and Judy allowed him to stay in the living room with the rest. About 10:30 that night, there were three knocks at the front door. Judy assumed it was Pat Giddings, opened the door. Strangely, though, no one was at the door. All was quiet for the next few minutes. Then they heard what sounded like barely audible scratching inside the living room wall. They listened intently for a minute. Suddenly, an unmistakable boom resounded in the attic. There was silence for a few seconds, then what sounded like footsteps walked across the attic floor above them. "Arnie," Judy said in a terrified whisper, "there's somebody up there." Arnie did not reply, just continued listening to the noises. Next, a muffled boom, boom, boom was heard downstairs in the kitchen. Then the scratching noise started again. They couldn't find him, just noise. The heat wave was getting worse. They had just experienced the first stage of diabolical manifestation. Later that day, and a couple of days later now, when the rest of the family was out of the house, I can't read all this book to you, so I'm going to put it in the bookstore. I want you to read it. Judy spoke with David. She wanted to get to the bottom of the problem. "How do you feel, honey? Do you have a fever or anything?" "I feel fine," David replied. "I'm fine." "Tell me about this thing you've been seeing. What does it look like and where is it now?" "I'm not supposed to talk about him," David replied. He's going to kill me, he said. "Well, I want to know, and I'm your mother. You're my son. You have a right to talk to me." "I don't know, Mommy. I'm scared. The beast told me that he's now my father, and I'm only supposed to listen to him and say my prayers to him." "What?" Judy was incredulous. "That's what he told me," David said. "And if I don't obey him, he said he's going to have me stabbed. Another time said he's going to have me shot." He describes him to her, what he'd been saying to him. The continuation of the discussion reaches this point. "David, you've been reading your catechism, and you know that Jesus..." "He says he's more powerful than Jesus," David interrupted. "That he's in charge of the world." Oh, no. David pulled back in the chair, stared with fright at something in the center of the room. Then he spoke as though there was someone present. "I didn't mean to. She told me to talk." "No, don't." Suddenly, Judy heard the sound of a loud slap. David's head spun to the side as a red mark appeared on his cheek. The event was incredible. She automatically jumped up and shouted angrily, "How dare you hit my son?" A second later, I want to read the exorcism. I like to read the end of a book. I want to read the worst exorcism you've ever heard in your life. All this went in between. Forgive me, I want to know. You want to hear the exorcism?
Yes, sir.
Most terrifying I've ever read. Clarita in the Philippines. Forgot to scare him, but lighting my pipe in the darkness as we came on. Mr. Q. And I want to know if you're beginning to recognize a similarity in these stories. Lester Sumrall didn't know anything about these people. Clarita Villanueva in the Bilibid prison in Manila, she didn't know anything about this. The Donovans didn't know anything about how to have things happen the same way as they're happening in this case. Again, you know, I teach to get a gestalt. All this is too unbelievable. I can't believe any of it. And yet I do. Get this story going. I don't want to get to the exorcism yet. That night around 10 o'clock, the intermittent noises stopped. The family went to bed shortly after 11. And David, despite strong resistance, was made to lie in his own bed with the light off. He could not, however, fall asleep. A dread fear was building up in him. David was sure something terrible was about to happen. Alan and Jason were asleep. David felt totally alone. He desperately wanted to get up, but was petrified to leave his bed, his only safe spot. Then it began. Oh, he was hitting him. Yeah, I swear, I should have finished that. Suddenly Judy heard the sound of a loud slap. David's head spun to the side as a red mark appeared on his cheek. The event was incredible. She automatically jumped up and shouted angrily, "How dare you hit my son?" A second later, David was slapped in the face again. "Don't, Mommy, don't talk back to him, please." Judy stood silent, fearing more would happen. Things settled down. They discussed a while. A few minor, by comparison, things happened. And they went to bed. And that's the scenario I'm now at. Afraid to leave his bed. Then it began. "David," said a low, strong voice from a distance. David's heart began to race. Then he heard slow, heavy breathing in the room. "David." The voice said again, only this time it seemed much nearer. David drew the covers up to his neck and stared out into the dark room. He knew what the voice was. I got a speaking impediment. "David." You having fun? Halloween's never been like this. This is serious, too. Where else do you get put to bed with a ghost story like this? "David." The voice spoke even more clearly and now obviously in the room. "I am speaking to you, David. Answer me," it commanded sharply. David whimpered. I hear you. Can you see me, David? No. Do you want to see me, David? No. What you want is for me to go away, isn't it? Yes. Then I will. I will go away forever. If you give me just one thing that I need, will you give it to me? David hesitated. What do you want me to give you? David hesitated. What do you want me to give you? David hesitated. What do you want me to give you? He hesitated. What is that? What do you want me to give you? Don't ask me questions, you scum. Just answer. Now, will you give me what I want? If you say yes, I will always give you whatever you want. You will never see me again. Is that not fair? Is that not what you want? Yes, I mean no, I don't know what you want. I want something you never use. Something you don't know you have. Something you'll never miss. You tell me no, I will never leave. You will always see me. And I will bring others with me. More hideous ones than you could ever think of. We will plague and torment you always. Will you now say yes? I don't know what you want. I want... Yes, ma'am. Now, you'll be glad I looked for this. He said, I'm going to bring a lot more back, remember? If you say no. Can I find this? It's going to scare the hair off your back. The infestation of the house, the oppression continued over many weeks, they finally contacted the Catholic priest that gave them the name of the Warrens. And the Warrens came like they did in the Donovan case. And there came a night when David went to bed that night. He did so with great trepidation. He couldn't sleep. You can answer King's House 1. He lay in the dark room, wide awake and alert. At first he simply felt uneasy. That emotion, however, slowly transformed into one of foreboding. Deep down, David knew something awful was about to happen. Shortly after midnight, it did. What arrived one by one were emissaries from the devil. First came the beast. It walked through the wall as though it didn't exist and stood in all its wicked glory at the foot of David's bed. It was out of its mind with fury. The priest's blessing had affronted its power. They had called a priest, but an ordinary priest is not authorized to perform an exorcism. He blessed all the rooms of the house from the basement up. The priest's blessing had affronted its power. The beast was there in front of David, enraged. You bleep bleep. You stinking human being. You betraying scum. How dare you insult me? I am the power. I'm all there is. There is no God. God is bleep. You are bleep. Its eyes were wild as it proceeded into blasphemies against the priest and the whole unfair kingdom of God. As the beast entity carried on with its awful fulminations, the two bloody helpers arrived. They materialized slowly until they appeared as solid as the first entity. Then they too began screaming and raging at the child. Debilitated with fright, David sought to cry out for help, but he had no voice. The madness went on and on. Sometimes they spat out accusations so fast that David couldn't follow what they were saying. Sometimes they spoke in languages he didn't understand, and many times what they said made no sense to him. We will make you one of ours. We will make you one of us. We own your soul. For hours, blasphemy, profanity, commands, demands, threats, predictions, wailing, screaming, blood-curdling shrieks flowed continuously. The degradation was total. What more could possibly happen? David Glatzel found out. When he did, he almost fainted. The beast and his two helpers began a profane chant and repeated it monotonously many times. Soon, David noticed the appearance of a bluish ball of light manifest in the vicinity of the three chanting spirits. The ball of light grew radiant, then elongated into a pencil-thin beam, which broadened out to the size of a man. The beam grew vivid in detail until a fourth entity materialized in the room. Once manifest, the creature was hideous in every way. It stood over 6 feet tall and had one eye in the front of the head and one eye in its back. Its nose was cut off, its mouth ripped open, its flaring red body was lacerated with slash marks out of which oozed blood. It had a gaping hole in its stomach. It appeared to be insane.